Hello and welcome to the Hopkins Biotech Podcast Insight segment, where we investigate major topics that are shaping medical treatments today. For updates about upcoming guests, follow us on social media and visit us at hopkinsbiotechpodcast.com to check out our full catalog of episodes. I'm your host, Joe Varielli, and I'm here with my co-host.
And Gustavo Carrizo.
Our guest today is Eric Vivier, SVP, CSO, and co-founder of Innate Pharma, a company developing innovative immunotherapy approaches with the goal of eradicating solid and metastatic tumors in the body. Eric is a doctor of veterinary medicine from the National Veterinary School of Maisons-Alfort and holds a PhD in immunology from the Paris University. After completing his postdoctoral fellowship at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute at Harvard Medical School, Professor Vivier joined the Center of Immunology at Marseille-Lumigny in 1993, becoming its director in 2008 until 2017. He has twice been laureate of the prestigious European Research Council Advanced Grants. During his career, Professor Vivier has been a visiting professor at the Scripps Research Institute, the Rockefeller University, and the Walter and Elisa Hall Institute. He is a member of the French National Academy of Medicine and the Institut Universitaire de France. Eric, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So our listeners will be really interested to hear about the transformative science behind Innate Pharma, but first we're hoping to find out a bit more about your career arc in general. Can you just tell us a bit about your overall role at Innate Pharma and your journey from academia to company founding?
Sure. So my role at Innate Pharma is really to be the CSO. So I am responsible for the scientific department at Innate Pharma that we are calling Innate Pharma Research Labs. So basically, we are trying to transform basic science into innovative drugs for patients in need in the field of cancer. That's what we are doing. And we are using a beautiful class of medicines, a beautiful class of drugs, which are the antibodies. So we are playing with the antibody Lego in order to promote the immune system or the immune response against cancer. That's one. But we are also using antibodies to directly target tumor cells and hence participate to the control of tumor burden. So my role is really to orchestrate how science leads help departments, in particular the immunopharmacology department or the antibody departments or the immunomics department. I can come back to this immunomics to let you know about what we are doing in the context of informatics, bioinformatics, and AI, and the translational department as well, all together to again transform research data into drugs for patients. So that's for the first part of your question. The second part is how come a veterinarian came into the game? And that's actually a long journey. But in a nutshell, when I started at the vet school in Paris, I realized that what was really striking to me was the beauty of discoveries. And I was really amazed by what people had done, in particular in the field of immunology, for reasons that I just don't know. You know, sometimes you like something and you just don't know exactly why. So I was attracted by immunology, probably because of the complexity and also because I have very good teachers. I think that this is extremely important to have mentors, teachers who can help you to be exposed in the best way possible to what is known and what is also unknown. And so I had at this period of time the ambition to participate, to explore the unknown, and maybe to contribute to a better understanding of the immune system. So I started this when I was at the vet school. And little by little, I ended up working in basic research labs in Paris as well. It was not really easy to commute at this period of time, so I had to buy a motorbike to do this, to be faster and do it. But I did it. I did it for like 4 years during my vet school and during also my preparation of during the preparation of my veterinary thesis. And so I worked from the start on human immunology, and I was at this period of time trying to understand how the immune system can be modulated by lipid mediators of inflammation. And based on this work, I actually ended up being a laureate of the Fogarty International Center, which was, I think, sponsored by the NIH to give fellowships, postdoc fellowships, to students, well, actually graduate students, to perform postdocs anywhere in the States. So I got the fellowship, then I applied to Harvard Medical School, and I was taken. I was extremely lucky. And so I ended up working at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and I was supposed to follow on my earlier research, you know, the modulation of the immune response by lipid mediators of inflammation. But when I arrived in the lab, my boss told me, oh, you know what? You're not going to work on what we discussed for the last 6 months or so. You're just going to work on NK cells. And I knew a bit about NK cells, natural killer cells. And to make what ended up to be a very long story, so to make it short, I'm still working on NK cells. So it was actually checking all the boxes, because it was the immune system. It was really the unknown at this period of time. This is back in 1989. So you guys were not born, probably. So I started working on this when I was at Harvard. And then when I came back to France, I really started a lab on NK cells. And this was back in 1995. And then I was lucky enough to make a discovery, which is now in textbooks, which is about the immune downregulation, the immune inhibition. At this period of time, back in the early 1990s, one knew quite a bit about how lymphocytes can be activated, but much less about how lymphocytes and also myeloid cells can be inhibited. And with my colleagues in the lab that we just founded, we again had the privilege to discover a mechanism by which NK cells, but beyond NK cells, a lot of different kind of hematopoietic cells can be inhibited by engagement of cell surface receptors. So the concept was the concept was inhibitory receptors exist at the surface of many cells of the immune system, and where they are engaged with cognate ligands that can be expressed on interacting cells, then a negative signal can be transduced within the cell. And this can lead to the inhibition of cell activation. So at this period of time, other labs had contributed to the field as well, the group of Jeff Ravetch at Rockefeller, but also the group of Marc Deron and Sébastien Migorena at Institut Curie in Paris, and also the group of Eric Long at the NIH. And so, you know, discovery is most of the time a collective story, collective journey, I should say. And it's really infrequent that one has a unique ID worldwide, this is not what happened to us. I mean, we were working in the in this context where several labs were searching, looking after regulation of lymphocyte activations through inhibition and cell surface inhibitory molecules. So we discovered iTeams, which is a motif, which is an intracytoplasmic motif expressed on many different cell surface receptors. ITIM standing for immunoreceptor tyrosine-based inhibition motif. And we've been able to show that upon engagement with ligands, this inhibitory molecule can actually be phosphorylated on the tyrosine residue and recruit protein tyrosine phosphatases that inhibit the activation signal. So basically, we were discovering that cell activation is a result of a dynamic balance at the biochemical level, between two opposite pathways. You have activating pathways, which works through activation of protein tyrosine kinases, whereas you have inhibitory pathway that works for activation of protein tyrosine phosphatases. And basically, the status of tyrosine phosphorylation of some key transduction substrate is really important to balance, to control, to fine-tune the activation of lymphocytes. So now we are in 1997, and then I met someone that I knew. So it was just another meeting. Someone who was working in the biotech industry in Marseille. His name is Hervé Brailly, and he was working in one of the first French biotech called Immunotech, and they were selling antibodies as reagents, in particular for research labs. And I remember very well, so I was giving my talks, you know, singing my song about this inhibitory interaction and how, you know, one can tune the activation of lymphocytes, in particular in K cells, because this was still, you know, the focus of my lab. And then Hervé came to me and said, well, don't you think that one could manipulate this balance between activating signals and inhibitory signals? And that was really the start of Innate Pharma, because then I said, obviously, yes, we should. We should think along those lines, and in particular, playing with antibodies. And so that's how we started with other colleagues of us. So we were six at this period of time, in particular with the late Alessandro Moretta in Genova, who was really one of the leaders worldwide in the field of natural killer cells. And at this period of time, we said, okay, well, NK cells are very interesting kind of lymphocytes because they have this propensity to recognize a vast array of tumor cells. And upon recognition, they can actually kill these tumor cells. That's how we started. And then we discovered that this activation can be blocked by engagement of inhibitory molecules, we reasoned that maybe if we would block the inhibition by antibodies that would interfere with the binding between the ligand and the inhibitory molecule, then one could unleash NK cells, in particular in their anti-tumor function. And this is what we've done. It turns out that at the exact same period of time, Jim Salison was working with CTLA-4, which, by the way, has been discovered at the Center for Immunology at Marcel Humini years ago. And also Tatsuku Honjo was working on PD-1. And in this period of time, so this is the late 90s, many, many labs were working on these inhibitory molecules and how one could translate these findings, meaning that lymphocytes can be inhibited by cell surface receptors for designing innovative treatments and playing with antibodies. So at the same time that we were doing this at Innate Pharma, and we started the company with the idea of blocking an inhibitory molecule called KIR. Actually, it's a family of molecules, but they recognize MHC class 1 as ligands. And when NK cells through KIRs in humans recognize MHC class 1, they are inhibited. So when they are inhibited, they are less effective to recognize and kill tumor cells. So it was obvious that if we could generate antibodies that could block this inhibitory interaction, then could unleash NK cells in their anti-tumor activity against, you know, cancer cells. And so this is how we started. And so when we founded the company, Innate Pharma, back in 1999, we were six, as I told you, but only two of us decided to work within the company. Actually, these two colleagues, Hervé Brailly and François Romagné, were already working in the industry. The four remaining ones, including me, were working in the academia. We were all professors or director of research. So we decided to stay within our labs, but to contribute as consultants for Innate Pharma to help the CSO, François Romagné, to conduct the research of the company. And this was how we worked until 2018, okay? So we've been working in collaboration with the CSOs, because then François Romagné left for another opportunity in Marseille. And so we were helping the company, but we are not working within the company. But, you know, so this period of time, so from 2008 until 2017, as you said, I was working as a director now at the Center for Immunology of Marcel Humini, which is kind of a very big center of immunology in Europe with 250 staff. And in 2017, I was approached and interested in taking over the position of general director of the Pasteur Institute in Paris. But then I met Mondaire Majoubi, who is the actual CEO of Innate Pharma, and together with Hervé Brailly, my old friend, they convinced me that maybe I should stay on site. Rather than going to Paris, I should actually consider joining the company for good, not as an advisor anymore, but really playing the game of being the CSO. And they convinced me, and I should really thank them for that, because I'm having a lot of pleasure and excitement and joy to work within the company. Because first of all, what we are trying to do is to treat patients. Our goal is to make bridges between basic research and industry, and basic research and drugs, basic research on treatment. So we are trying to cure patients who need it. And so this is my motivation every day. It's not really now anymore to write scientific papers, as I've been doing for the last 20 years, which is really, really good and really exciting. But now my work is really more in the translation of these findings. And so that's the first reason why I like Innate Pharma, because I think it's very exciting, again, to try to help people in search of a cure, in particular in the context of cancer. The second aspect, which is wonderful, is the mindset at Innate Pharma. It's a biotech company which started from scratch, as I've been trying to recapitulate for you, with one staff up to now 240 or something, with the main buildings in Marseille, an office in the States, with two products in phase three clinical trials, or in pivotal studies, I should say, and another set of molecules in clinical trials for seeking signal clinical trials. And we have, in addition to that, beyond that, a quite large and diversified and rich, I think, preclinical portfolio on which we are working, always in this idea, in this mission, in the aim of providing new treatments for patients in the field of cancer. And we are still working with antibodies, but recently we have actually proposed a totally new platform, which is based on the antibody Lego and the beauty of the antibody Lego, I should say, in the form of what we call now ANKET, for antibody-based NK cell engager therapeutics.
First of all, thank you for sharing all of your journey. And you were talking about how many years that it took to really understand NK cells and all the potential that those cells have and how important they are. And I would like to ask you, in your journey, because big part of your research being focused on understanding that, what are the advantages, first of all, of NK cells based approach, but also like what wasn't possible before that now is possible? Just to understand why maybe right now is the right moment. Right now, NK cells, and compared with other cells, and they can have this potential and really transform cancer immunotherapies.
No, thanks for your question. They are excellent questions. And I think that you said it all, in fact, when you said this is a good moment for NK cells. It's obvious. One of the heroes, I should say, of immunotherapy is Carl June, who was one of the pioneers of CAR T cells. And Carl said already 3 years ago, I think, that the next big thing in immuno-oncology are NK cells, or is NK cells. And I think he's obviously right, working on these cells since like 25 plus years now. So why is it interesting to harness the function of NK cells, and what is now possible that was not before? So for the first part, I think that one should really, and I'm sorry to say the obvious, we know that T cells can control cancer. And this is at the basis of the Nobel Prizes given to Jim Allison and Tatsuku Hongo, and also recognizing all the efforts of many labs in that field. And this is how we think that the anti-PD-1, anti-PD-L1 are working. And we also know that this is how CAR T cells are working. So this is given.
Okay.
But what we also know from decades of immunology is that T cells are not autonomous in what they do. T cells need other cells to do what they do. First of all, to recognize the antigen. I mean, T cells have to recognize an antigen presented by MHC class 1 or MHC class 2. So they are not autonomous in recognizing the antigen. The antigen has to be presented. And dendritic cells are very good at doing this, as we know. But this is not the only aspect of the lack of autonomy, if I could express myself this way. NK cells need also cytokines and chemokines in their environment to do what they do. I mean, these cytokines in particular participate to the shaping of this adaptive immune response. We all know that gamma interferon, for example, is very important for the shaping of T cell response into the Th1. And we know also that other cytokines are important for the Th2 mode of action of T cells. So by large, we know that, you know, T cells need cells of the innate immune system to become effector cells. And in particular, in the context of cancer, the grail still is to initiate and maintain a memory and protective T cell response against tumors. But again, as I said, in order to do that, one needs cells of the innate immune system, hence the name of our company, Innate Pharma, because I focused for the short introduction I made on NK cells, but we had also in mind that NK cells, well, we knew that NK cells are not part of the adaptive immune system, they are really a prototype of lymphocytes of the innate immune system. But beyond that, there are many, many cells, in particular in the myeloid compartment, that participate to the innate immune system and participate, hence, to the activation of T cells. So this is the key of the understanding of why harnessing NK cells makes sense. Because once you harness NK cells, what you can do is to recapitulate the entire response against tumor. You are not going to, you know, bypass all the innate immune system and just activate T cells. No, you will start from scratch. And what we have in mind is that our assets will be providing some kind of a spark at the tumor bed and maybe also the draining lymph node and maybe also elsewhere that will end up in particular to trigger NK cell function, but we have other assets that will still work still target the innate immune system, but with other cells than NK cells. But the concept is the same. We're providing the spark, and as far as NK cells are concerned, that will end up in inducing or boosting the killing of tumor cells by NK cells. That's one. But there is also a second aspect. This is a double effect, the famous double Kiss-Kool effect. First, you kill NK tumor cells, but also NK cells will be able to secrete cytokines and chemokines that will participate to the choreography, to the orchestration of the adaptive immune response and the rest of the innate immune response as well. So this is why I think harnessing NK cells is providing a very complete triggering of the immune response against tumor cells. Okay, and without obviously forgetting that NK cells by themselves recognize a vast array of tumor cells. So what is possible now that was not possible before? Well, the biology of NK cells was really ignored until 1995. This is in major contrast with the biology of T cells because, you know, the beauty of the genetic rearrangement that leads to the shaping of the T-cell repertoire and the B-cell repertoire obviously worked as an attraction for many labs working in immunology. And that makes a lot of sense. And how T-cells recognize the target, how B-cells recognize the target, and all this unknown within the field of adaptive immunity have again attracted many labs. And as a consequence of that, you know, working on NK cells was quite weird, you know, by when I started working on this in 1989, you know, I said to my fellow postdocs at Harvard, you know, I'm working on NK cells. They said, okay, well, okay. Is it interesting? Is it worth it? What are these cells? You know, I mean, the BAP10 of NK cells is not a very good start in the world, so to speak, because when NK cells were discovered, they were not called NK cells. They were called non-T, non-B cells, which is not a good start because when you are named with two negative terms, it looks like there is nothing positive on you. You know, just you are not a T cell and you're not a B cell. So you're not something, you're just what the others are not. So that was not a very good start. And I think it's not a joke. The leader labs in immunology were not working on NK cells. And little by little, the story has changed dramatically. Because in particular, my boss at Harvard discovered that NK cells could express a subunit associated to the T cell receptor. And he published this in Nature, and for this reason, because it was so surprising that, in fact, NK cells could have some unknown similarities with T cells. And that was really the start. And then when discovered that NK cells are really activated by IL-2, so in the context of cancer, it's obviously very important because when one knows that even though IL-2 can be toxic, now one can manipulate IL-2 and promote the anti-tumor function of IL-2, and a substantial part of this anti-tumor activity of IL-2 goes through the activation of NK cells. So there is a lot of basic findings that were not present before that we know now that allow us to build on this knowledge in order to better understand the biology of NK cells and hence to better manipulate NK cells.
So now that we have this background on the NK cell biology that goes into developing these next generation therapies, I want to get a bit more granular and talk about specifically the aspect of NK cell biology that allows them to have these anti-tumor properties. And really, it seems like what you're doing in Innate Pharma is leveraging specific activating receptors in order to activate NK cells in the tumor microenvironment so that they can carry out their function. And one of those activating receptors is NKp46. I'm hoping you could just tell us a little bit about NKp46 and what its role is in the activation of NK cells and maybe how you're using your technology to leverage that activation.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Another very important question. So first of all, NKp46 is an NK cell surface receptor that was discovered by our late colleague Alessandro Moretta back in the early 1990s. So it's an activating cell surface receptor. Interestingly, NKp46 is coupled to CD3 zeta and FCR gamma, meaning two ITAM-bearing polypeptides, which are well known in the T cell field and the FC receptor field to be very strong transduction elements. So that's the first point. The second point is that NKp46 is by far the best NK cell marker known at present. There are other cells that can express NKp46, but very discrete subset of non-NK cells. You can have minute amounts, very discrete subset of T cells that can express NKp46, but there are other NK cell features. You can have also some subset of innate lymphoid cells, which is now a group of lymphocytes that we had the privilege to discover as well, to co-discover, I should say, in 2008, which include NK cells. So it's a group of lymphocytes which are non-T cells, non-B cells, but that still participate to the immune response. And so besides NK cells, which obviously are the prototypical example of these ILCs, There are other subsets of this lymphocyte class that can express in KP46. But beyond this very precise example, NKP46 is by far the best NK cell marker. Importantly, NKP46 is extremely conserved through evolution. And this is really good news when use also mouse models to try to translate the findings in humans. Because mouse NK cells express in KP46, human NK cells express in KP46. And KP46 in the mouse is very homologous to the human NKP46. And actually, if you want to go along those lines, NKP46 is very conserved through all mammals, and not only at the protein level, but also when one looks at the gene organization, it's really conserved as well. So it tells us, it suggests that it has a very important role for NK cells because it's conserved and it's NK cell specific or preferentially expressed on NK cells. And it's also an activating receptor. So based on that, we said, okay, so how can we use NKP46? And again, playing with the Lego, so in parallel to our attempts to unleash NK cells by blocking inhibitory molecules, we said, okay, now can we work on activating molecules? And can we actually super boost the activating molecule? So we've been generating a vast array of antibodies against NKP46, and we've been reasoning that maybe one could try to redirect the activity of NK cells selectively to a tumor cell in the context of precision medicine. You wouldn't like to activate NK cells in an untargeted way. You know, the best case scenario on which we are working is really to, again, redirect all the anti-tumor activity of NK cells selectively on these tumor cells in order to have more efficacy and more safety as well. And so this is what we have been doing by generating a new platform, again, called ANKET for antibody-based NK cell engager therapeutics, which is co-ligating two activating receptors on NK cells in cis. So on the same NK cell, we will co-engage NKP46 on one side and another activating receptor expressed on NK cells, which is CD16, which is the only activating Fc receptor expressed on NK cells. And by co-ligating these two activating receptors, one creates a major boost in NK cell effector function, not only in terms of cytotoxicity, but also in terms of cytokines and chemokine secretion. And as we wanted to redirect the activity towards the tumor cell, one created actually a trifunctional molecule like this, okay? So imagine that here we are co-engaging NKP46 and CD16, but now we are also targeting a tumor cell through an FAB fragment of an antibody that recognizes a given tumor antigen. So one creates a bridge, a physical bridge, through this a trifunctional ANKET between tumor cells on one side and NK cells on the other side. But this bridge is also an activating bridge, because remember that we are cross-linking NKP46 and CD16 at the same time. So that creates a unique environment, which is promoting the anti-tumor function of NK cells. And the first report that we wrote on this was published in Cell in 2019. And this is the first description of this trifunctional ANKET. Now, there is more to it, because as I told you, IL-2 is a very interesting cytokine when one knows how to use it. In particular, by genetic engineering of IL-2, one can create IL-2 variants. And we have created one of those. We have created a non-alpha IL-2. So two words on this IL-2. So IL-2 has three receptors, CD25, IL-2 receptor alpha, CD122, IL-2 receptor beta, and IL-2 receptor gamma. The good thing is that NK cells constitutively express IL-2R beta and IL-2R gamma, but they do not express IL-2R alpha. And it's good, because you might know that Tregs, the regulatory T cells, which we really do not want to activate in the context of cancer immunotherapy, are very high expressors of IL-2R alpha. So if we are creating an IL-2 which doesn't ban IL-2R alpha, what we call non-alpha IL-2, now we will eliminate the possibility to hyperboost Tregs, but rather concentrate IL-2 towards cells that express IL-2R beta and IL-2R gamma, such as NK cells. So started with this trifunctional enquete. Now we added a fourth moiety to make a tetrafunctional enquete. And you have to imagine that on one side, we have three binders to NK cells, one anti-NKp46, one CD16, and one for IL-2R beta through the non-alpha IL-2. And on the other side, we have also the anti-tumor antigen. So now we have a very avid molecule. The avidity of the tetrafunctional enquete for NK cells is huge. It's very difficult to quantify the exact avidity because I don't want to go into biophysical details where there are not details, but biophysical aspects. But you know that the only way of measuring interactions is through KD and K-on and K-off. This defines affinity, not avidity. But avidity is probably a function of these affinities. So you have a molecule with high avidity towards NK cells. And we are redirecting this activity towards tumor cells because we have an FAB fragment within the same molecule that redirects NK cells towards the tumor cell. This is great because actually the paper is in revision at a very high impact factor journal. We are working as fast as possible to have IND for a first proprietary enquete molecule. And with the idea of having a first patient in as soon as possible. But in the same time, in collaboration with our colleagues at Sanofi, we have already a trifunctional enquete into the clinic. So it's not a dream anymore. Our dream is really, our ambition is to transform science into drugs. But we are doing it. It's not just words. We are doing it. And as far as enquete are concerned, we have done it in particular, in collaboration with, as I said, with our colleagues at Sanofi to treat AML, which is a big unmet medical need. So we are targeting one tumor antigen on AML, which is the alpha chain of the IL-3 receptor, CD123, incorporated into a trifunctional enquete that co-engages NKp46 and CD16.
Interesting. And the fact that now you are using a tetra-specific like molecule, because IL-2 give it to patients, it was working, but also very toxic, right? And because all the things that you said. And now having this new technology where you can target the variant without touching all the different cells, I think that also like really, again, reinforcing how important it is to collaborate in that and giving you the chance to improve over your platform. Now, I would like to ask you about so what are the challenges in the tumor microenvironment that can be bypassed by NK cells? But second, if all of the type of cancer so far would be able to be targeted in this way, if there are like NK hot tumors or not?
Yeah, well, there are many factors that have been described in basic immunology that can hamper the function of NK cells, in particular the tumor bed. TGF-beta is one of it. You have other factors like PGE2 also, the prostaglandin E2 can downregulate the activation of NK cells. So the idea is actually to promote the activation of NK cells in such a way that this will be able to bypass all these antagonist factors. And the preclinical model that we have developed are really showing us an unprecedented activity of NK cells against tumors when mice are treated with this tetra-specific enquete. So we are exploring, as I speak, all the factors that can impact on the activity of enquete. And as you say, there are some immunosuppressive factors that can really be a concern, but so far the preclinical data are very exciting. So we are obviously looking for the clinical data. We know that in vivo veritas, but not so in particular in human in vivo veritas. So only the clinical trials will tell us, but you have to start with something. And all the preclinical data that we have obtained so far in the context of ANKET are very satisfactory and very encouraging.
Yeah, and I like how you've, throughout the interview, kind of taken us through the really basic science and getting into the clinic and understanding the, you know, sort of the future of this platform and how you've uniquely designed these ANKET molecules. I'm wondering what the next evolution of this platform might be, or you know, whether you could plan trials with combination therapies, immunotherapy, chemotherapy, what have you. And potentially, if you think that this platform may have therapeutic implications beyond cancer.
Yes, so the future of NK cells, we are writing it. We are not the only one in the field. So there, as we said earlier, I mean, NK cells are really emerging as very exciting candidates for participating to what we are all waiting for, meaning the second wave of immunotherapy. So beyond immune checkpoint inhibitors, beyond CAR T cells, considering that there are still too many patients who do not benefit from these treatments, despite the beauty of the of what has been done and beyond the success, there are still most of the patients do not benefit from IO. Either by primary resistance to this IO treatment or by acquired, it's called secondary resistance. So we need to find something else. And this something else can be obviously used in combination therapy. So to your point. And so for the time being, for example, one of our key assets, which is monalizumab, which is an antibody that we have developed with our colleagues and friends at AstraZeneca, this monalizumab is now as I said, entering phase 3 clinical trials in both head and neck cancer, but also in non-small cell lung carcinoma. And this monalizumab is actually blocking one inhibitory molecule that I didn't evoke yet, which is NKG2A, which is expressed on NK cells, but also on T cells. So monalizumab blocking a molecule that can be expressed on two different cell types is actually some kind of a prototypical example of a new class of immune checkpoint inhibitors that one could call maybe broad spectrum immune checkpoint inhibitors, referring to broad spectrum antibiotics, because the idea is actually to unleash two kinds of cells. And we know that there are other groups working along those lines as well. So one can think that one can unleash NK cells by blocking NKG2A, for example. At the same time, one can also activate NK cells through MKP46-based reagents. So this is just to give you an idea of what could be done. And actually, the possible combinations, with the number of possible combinations is huge, because also I'm not even entering into at what time during the disease these treatments could be given. There are many attempts now to use immunotherapy in neoadjuvant settings. There is also the possibility of coupling radiotherapy to immunotherapy, radiotherapy, immunotherapy, and surgery, radiotherapy and chemotherapy and surgery and immunotherapy. So we have different buckets. Okay, we have surgery, we have chemotherapy, we have targeted therapy, we have immunotherapy, and we can also combine this with cell therapy, because, for example, infusion of NK cells is also very attractive, and the combination of NK cell infusion plus an NK cell engager has been done by our colleagues at the MD Anderson, Kathy Revzani, and she had obtained very exciting data along those lines. So again, the world of NK cells is emerging. I'm not saying yet exploding, because only the clinical trials, positive clinical trials, will tell us whether or not this is the case. We are crossing fingers. But despite the fact that we don't know yet the result of clinical trials leading to drug approval, there are very interesting results. I just mentioned nalizumab, which is entering in phase 3 clinical trial in two different cancers. I mentioned the work of Kathy Revzani. We are, as I said, launching clinical trial with Anket, and others are working along those lines as well. So it's really emerging. So the future is obviously very difficult to predict. Sorry to say the obvious again. But one can prepare the future.
Yeah, I really appreciate your perspective that you're, really writing the future of these new emerging therapies. I think that's something that many of our listeners would aspire to in their careers as well. Eric, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us all about Innate Pharma and the future of the ANKET platform and some of the new clinical data that you've recently received.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to follow Hopkins Biotech Podcast on social media at Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter for updates about upcoming guests, and visit us at hopkinsbiotechpodcast.com to check out our full catalog of episodes. I'm Joe Varelli.
And I'm Gustavo Carrizo.
Thank you for listening.